Welcome to Weird Stuff Happens in Canada.
I'm Britt!
Okay. I'm Emily.
And this is a podcast about the weird things that happen in Canada that you might not know about.
Maybe you do. Maybe you're so mad about how many mistakes we make.
Yeah.
If you're that person, just stop listening. It's not going to get any better.
We just try our best, and this is the best.
This is the best we got.
While working full-time jobs.
Yeah.
And dealing with this cat that
someday we'll be podcast baronesses.
Yeah.
And then we won't have to work, and then we will just be able to do so much research.
Yeah.
All the time, and we definitely will do it instead of just fucking around and doing other things. We would spend all our time doing research. So if that's your dream, give us money, please.
Money, please.
We don't have like a Kickstarter or anything, so you can just put cash in an envelope and leave it at our apartment.
Yep. Thanks.
Great. This week is the first part of another two-part episode.
And before you get excited, it's about the very serious and often complicated and infuriating history of immigration in Canada.
Hooray, 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 hooray.
Now, it's going to be fun.
That was everybody saying how happy they are.
Does everybody have the same voice?
Yeah, our audience is two sets of octuplets.
Whoa!
Yeah.
Do we have eight listeners?
You can do it.
16 listeners?
Probably.
I feel like that's like, you know, shooting for the moon a little bit, but
even if you miss, as they say,
in a garbage pile ravaged by raccoons.
I don't think that's the saying.
Yep, in Toronto it is.
So we're doing a two-part episode because we want to talk about some of the more problematic parts of the history of Canadian immigration. There is a lot to discuss, and we once again will do a very sort of surface job of getting into it, but we will try to give these issues their due.
And right now you're probably thinking, I could probably pass on this episode, but we're going to encourage you not to.
And I learned so much, so I bet you might as well, listener.
Yeah. So let's tell me a story about immigration, Emily.
Okay. Well, I'm going to tell you today about Chinese immigration and how mean Canada was all the time. That's sort of it's a workshopping theme song.
Okay. Yeah. Great, 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 great.
So, did you know, Brittany?
Yes.
That
I can almost guarantee you that I did not know.
Well, did you know that Chinese Canadians are one of the largest ethnic groups in Canada?
I didn't know that.
I mean, it's not
super
surprising.
I could guess that, probably.
Yeah, but they have a very rocky history.
Yeah.
So this is one of those things that I sort of kind of knew about. Mm-hmm. There's a Heritage Minute about them building the railway.
I was going to say, I was like, my memory is of that Heritage Minute where they're building the railway.
Yeah. So we know it's not great. It was much worse than I ever knew.
Oh, God.
All right. So let's take it back.
Okay.
To 1788.
Okay. Whoa. Way back.
Way back. Which was when the first Chinese immigrants that we know of, that are documented, arrived in Canada. There very well could have been Chinese immigrants before that,
right,
but those were kind of the first time that anyone ever, I guess, wrote it down.
Okay.
So there was a group of 50 Chinese artisans who arrived in 1788 with Captain John Mears, and they landed in BC, and they were going to help this captain basically build a trading post and encourage the trade of sea otter pelts between China and the Canadian settlers.
Okay.
Because who doesn't want a sea otter pelt to keep you warm at night or something?
Don't let the seal hear about that.
But at that time, the Spanish were trying to have a trade monopoly on the West Coast. So they were like, hey, you captain, get out of here. And he was like, okay. But then a whole bunch of those Chinese members of his crew stayed behind.
Okay.
And some of them actually even married Aboriginal women and like established their little settlement there. So that was kind of like the first official or unofficial Chinese Canadian settlement.
Okay.
So in 1858, the start of Chinese immigration to Canada really started going strong because of the gold rush.
Right.
So there were lots of Chinese workers who came first to, like, California to follow the gold rush. And then when they realized there wasn't, that was kind of done down there, they, like, would go up to Canada looking for work. And a whole bunch of people, as we know, at that time were hired to work on the building of the Canadian Pacific Railway.
Right.
I think it's pretty well known in Canada that, you know, they worked in terrible conditions.
Yep.
The Chinese Canadians were given all of the worst, most dangerous jobs. They got paid less.
Right.
They weren't allowed to, like, live in the nicer camps.
Oh, my God.
Which were not even that nice. They had to live in, like, the worst camps. Like, it was really bad. In between 1880 and 1885, it's estimated that 15,000 Chinese workers worked on the sort of BC section of the CPR.
Okay.
And that more than 600 of them died.
Whoa.
So, not great.
Holy
not a good
shit.
Place to start.
Yeah.
So, 1885, the railway is finished.
Okay.
And everyone's like, yay, we can get across the country.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. But there are now all of these Chinese immigrants who don't have jobs.
Right.
And right away, the government was like, we want to stop more Chinese people from coming.
Oh, God.
So the... Yep, said that already. Cool. So the Canadian government's solution to this was that they passed what they called the Chinese Immigration Act of 1885.
Oh, great. Tell me what this horrible thing was.
Yeah. It's bad. So every Chinese immigrant was required to pay a $50 entry or head tax to get into the country.
Oh my God.
And $50 was a lot of money, especially for these workers.
Yeah, like it was, they were like trying to come and like find a way to live and
exactly,
like build their life.
Exactly. And it was like designed to be a really difficult sum of money.
Yeah, it was designed to keep them out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There was a couple of exceptions. There was, like, diplomats and, for a while, students, but then they took students back, too. Like, it really was severely limiting.
Yeah.
But not limiting enough.
Oh, God.
So in 1900, there were still lots of immigrants, especially Chinese immigrants, coming to BC. The people in BC didn't like it, so they raised the head tax to $100.
Fucking.
And which was even more outlandish.
Yeah.
The average Chinese laborer at the time earned about $300 a year.
Oh, my God.
And they had an average of $43 left after living expenses every year.
Oh, my God.
So you can only possibly save $43, and it costs $100 to get into the country.
Yeah.
Like, it's just insane.
You just, like, can't do it.
But people were doing it.
Oh, my God.
Like, huge numbers of people were somehow scraping together this money and getting into the country. And the government...
Oh, my God. Don't tell me that they raised it again.
They did not like that.
Oh, God.
So, in 1903, the head tax was $500.
Oh, my... They were like, you know what? We really just need to, like... Like, none of this, like, doubling it. Let's just, like, blow it out of the fucking water.
Let's make it absolutely insane. Which, basically, $500 at the time was the equivalent of buying two homes.
Damn.
So, like, it's something that you save up your whole life to do twice.
Yeah.
And still, some people were doing it.
Oh, my God.
They
That's
were,
amazing.
It is amazing that people...
And also, like, that, like... Honestly, we're lucky to have the people that were, like, even with that, like, racist bullshit limitation,
yeah,
they were still willing to come to our country.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those are the people that you want in your country, and you're so trying so desperately to keep them out, and they're so tenacious and still able to make it happen.
And because, you know, at this time, China is not in a very good position.
No.
Like, there's, you know, civil war. Most of these people were from, like, poor southern rural China.
Yeah.
They didn't have any other options. So it's like, you know, I feel like Canada mostly now has such a reputation as like we welcome everybody, yeah. and I think, you know, that when they sort of reimagined Canadian immigration in the 60s, like we started that legacy that mm-hmm. we have now, but it was by no means always like that.
Definitely.
And it's just like, it's so heartbreaking to think of these people who just, they just want to come to Canada and have a better life.
Yeah.
And in a lot of cases, it's like their family was here.
Yeah.
That they were separated, and like we made it so incredibly hard for them.
Yeah. And like, can you imagine like raising the $100, coming here and being like, I'm going to set everything up and then bring my family over. And yeah. then suddenly it's $500 for your like wife and children.
And that's not even including the cost of the trip.
Yeah, transportation over. It's just insane.
And then how are you supposed to set up your life if you have no money?
Yeah. You get here and you're absolutely penniless. And you're creating a situation in which people are going to arrive here and, like, potentially be homeless.
Yeah.
In, like, a desperate situation.
100%. Or they're going to arrive and the money is going to be five times what they thought it was. Because it's not like you can spread the word about how much it is.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Like, coming and thinking it would be $100 and then it's $500.
Yeah, and they're like, sorry, you can't come in. And then you don't have any money to go back. Like, what do you do?
You just, like, live under the docks, I guess.
I don't think that's true.
That's what I would do.
But maybe. Who knows?
I would just, like, become, like, a crazy lady that lived under the docks and, like, pretended to be a ghost and, like, haunted the souls. No. I'll just stop.
Were you going to say the soldiers?
I was going to say soldiers. I was going to try to say sailors, but I'm pretty tired. So my, like, brain-to-mouth filter is, like, not great.
So if you see Brit pretending to be a ghost, just go with it. That's what we've learned here.
Yeah.
So there were other restrictions in the act other than just the monetary restrictions, like, that are crazy.
Yeah.
So ships that were carrying immigrants were allowed one Chinese passenger for every 50 tons of the ship's total weight.
What?
In comparison, a ship full of European immigrants was allowed one passenger for every 2 tons of the ship's total weight.
Oh my God.
So it was just like this arbitrary rule to be like, you can only have 4 people on board. Like, I don't know how, heavy ships are.
Yeah, me neither. But still, that's insane.
Yeah. Anyone with signs of leprosy, infectious diseases, or anyone who was thought to be a sex worker was not allowed into the country.
Of course.
And
I feel like how it was thought to be a sex worker.
Yeah.
Because you could just apply that to anyone.
Any woman or man, but like probably mostly women. Yeah. They'd be like, well, you're probably a sex worker. So. Yeah. Get out of here.
And she's like, I'm here with my husband and my children.
Nope.
And I just...
Nope.
I'm actually like a very wealthy woman.
Nope. She tried to have sex with me just a minute ago. I saw it. And all Chinese residents in Canada, even if you were Canadian citizen born in Canada, had to pay a 50-cent fee to register with the local authorities. So basically, like, they made a database of all of the Chinese residents.
Oh, my God.
Which was, you know, just, it's the start of everything good when you start to
definitely
log everybody.
That's
of a
what
certain...
the X-Men have taught us.
And also, you know, like, history. Sort of.
And the X-Men.
And the X-Men. Also historical. It's real. So, the head tax, as it is widely known, was in effect for 38 years.
What?
So, from 1885 to 1923.
I just feel like the 1920s was not that long ago.
Oh, you don't even know.
Oh, my God. Okay.
So, in that period, approximately 82,000 immigrants paid approximately $23 million in taxes.
Whoa.
And that's, like, 1900s, $23 million.
Whoa.
Like, and all of that money went to the government.
Holy shit.
And one of the things that was really weird about it is that because of the immigrants, most of them were coming to BC. So it was something like 40% of that money ended up in like the BC government's coffers.
Right.
And they could just like do whatever the fuck they wanted with it because it was just tax they collected. Like, it was wild. But despite this crazy tax, the Chinese Canadian population continued to grow.
Okay.
So in 1923, guess what the government did?
They put, like, a higher tax on people.
No. They passed the Chinese Immigration Act of 1923, which banned all Chinese immigrants.
What the fuck?
Yeah. I sort of knew about the head tax.
I definitely knew about the head tax. I did not know that there was a literal bill.
A literal ban. There was a handful of exemptions. Super wealthy merchants, diplomats, certain students. But it was pretty much an all-out ban on Chinese immigration.
And did they have, like, a rationale for it?
Yeah, they were like, we don't want you here.
It was literally just straight up. They didn't try to, like, disguise it as, like, oh, we need to cut down on immigration, like what's happening in the States right now. For the safety of our country.
Yeah, I don't know. It's the only time in Canadian history that a specific group has been banned solely for their country of origin.
That's insane.
Like, there have been lots of other times, which we will talk about, where, you know, a lot of groups, immigrant groups were persecuted, but I feel like, in a lot of cases, they tried to, like, make up something. They'd be like, oh, because of Russian spies, or, like, whatever the excuse was. But this was just like, we don't want you here.
Like, in a way, like, I would rather have the racism be up front.
I mean, sure.
If you gotta choose a brand of racism, at least, because then you can address it. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, in the States right now, with their, like, country band, it's like, it's, like, disguised as being, like, you know, these are countries where, like, dangerous people are coming from. When straight up, it's like that ban is a Muslim ban.
Yeah.
You're banning Muslim people. Mm-hmm. But it's, like, you don't have the balls to say it. Canada in the 1920s, it was, like, I guess it was just easier to be overtly racist back then.
They just, like, didn't give a fuck about anything.
That's crazy.
So, this became known also as the Chinese Exclusion Act, unsurprisingly.
Yeah.
Which the United States also had a Chinese Exclusion Act.
Of course they did.
So, that's great. Everyone was just doing super great across the board.
And was that was just for new Chinese immigrants?
Yes.
That didn't apply to, like, the Chinese
It didn't apply to the people who were already here. But
I'm sure it didn't make things great.
Well, so by 1923, the men in Chinese Canadian communities outnumbered women almost 28-1.
Whoa.
Because so many male workers had come first.
Right.
And in a lot of cases, they were either A, really young.
Yeah.
So, and if you, say you came in, you know, especially if you came to build the railway, then you were probably in your early 20s at that point. Mm-hmm. So now you're like an old man. So they started calling them bachelor societies because it was just men.
Oh, God.
And women, like, couldn't get in anymore.
Right.
And so there was even, like, families where, you know, the husband had left the wife and kids behind in China.
Oh, God.
He's now in Canada, and, like, they can't get here.
Oh, God.
It's so heartbreaking.
That makes me feel so sad. Like, literally, your family cannot immigrate. And, like, you can't really go back.
Because there's nothing there for you.
Yeah.
Like,
you've been building this life
exactly,
here.
Exactly. All you can do is hope that they will change the rules.
Yeah.
And so it had a really devastating effect on the Chinese-Canadian population because a whole generation of men basically couldn't have families.
Yeah.
Unless, I guess, they could, like, marry someone who's not Chinese.
Yeah.
But if you already had a family.
Yeah. Like, no, you want your family to come.
Yeah.
And also, it was probably difficult to have a relationship with someone that was not Chinese.
Definitely.
So it's like slim pickings when there's, like, one woman for every 28 men.
Yeah.
It's just
wild.
A bad situation.
So in 1947, the Chinese Immigration Act is repealed.
Okay.
So, as of 1947, officially, Chinese people could immigrate to the country. Immigrate. What's the difference between immigrate and emigrate?
This is not the time or place for me to answer that question,
whichever,
which I definitely know the answer
whichever
to.
One is right. Immigrate.
I think immigrate means to you're coming here. Emigrate is
from.
Away. Yeah.
Yeah, we got it. I knew that. I was testing you. So, between 1947 and 1967, when they completely redid the Immigration Act, it was still very difficult.
Yeah.
It was, like, Chinese Canadians were not looked upon as being, like, the most desirable immigrants, but there was nothing officially stopping them anymore.
Right.
So, immediately, people were like, hey, but remember all that money we paid? Like, could we maybe get that back? And the government was like, what? No, that's crazy. Get out of here. It's crazy.
Literally
get out of here because we don't want you here.
Get out of here. Go back.
I mean, like, you're here now, so it's like, fine, I guess. But like, we're keeping your money.
What's done is done. It's in the past. Can't we all just move forward?
Yeah. So immediately there was advocacy for redress, they call it. But nothing really gained much traction until the 80s.
Okay.
Which is
like, it's like so recent. I mean,
it's 40 years between like when they repealed the act and when they were like, maybe. And they, as you'll see, they didn't agree for a lot more than that.
There are like some like badass like Chinese activists that were working during that
there
time.
There was a bunch of people who were like, this is like their life's work.
Yeah.
So in 1983, two elderly Chinese Canadians, their names were Dak Leon Mark and Shaq Lee, they lived in BC and they just like went to their local member of parliament's office.
I love them already.
And they were like, can we have our $500 back? And so she, to her credit, like took their request to the House of Commons.
Amazing.
And the government was like, lol, no. And they were like, okay.
And they're like, but I would just really like to have my $500 back. That's amazing.
Yeah. So there were kind of two main groups that were working towards getting redress. The Chinese Canadian National Council and the National Council of Chinese Canadians.
That's too close, you guys.
Well,
you gotta really differentiate.
Well, I this is probably going to be wrong and muddied, and I apologize to anyone. But it originally, I think, was one group, and then they were divided over what happened in Tiananmen Square.
Okay.
So then they became two separate groups because they were both working towards, like, this this issue of, like, getting redress for these, for the head tax, but in other ways, they were very different in their beliefs.
Okay.
So that's why there's, like, two names and two different groups that were, in this case, working towards the same goal.
Right. Okay, great.
So these two groups started to put pressure on the government to acknowledge and address its history of anti-Chinese policies. And in the 80s and 90s, additional organizations started adding traction, and there were protests and events all across the country. And I think also in the 90s, like a lot of, there was just a lot of this stuff coming out, like, and people for the first time in a lot of ways were saying like, actually,
yeah,
maybe not so much.
I wonder too if it's because at that time, a lot of the people that would have originally immigrated and paid the head tax were getting old.
Very, very old.
And I wonder, honestly, I wonder if at 80, 90, you're just like, I don't give a fuck anymore.
Yeah.
I'm just gonna, like, be loud and be belligerent and, like, make myself heard.
And it's also, like, if you're 80 years old and, like, you want to see something happen in your lifetime, like, you better get on it.
Yeah, you're like, I guess I'm the one that's gonna have to make this happen.
So, in 1993...
Okay.
Canadian Treasurer Prime Minister Brian Mulroney, he offered individual medallions and a museum wing to Chinese Canadians and several other redress-seeking communities. So he bundled them all together, all of these groups that wanted redress, and he was like, I'll give you each a medal. And we'll give you a wing in a museum.
But can we have our money?
And they were like, fuck no. Yeah. They were probably like, we respectfully decline or something like that. But like,
the underlying sentiment was, go fuck yourself.
Like, Brian.
Yeah.
Brian.
That's like a symbolic bullshit.
That's bullshit.
Like, has nothing to
do. It's such bullshit.
And it's like, it's just kind of like patting them on the head and being like, hey, thanks.
Yeah, like, we
can go sit down.
We're sort of listening, but, like, not really. Yeah. Like, we have other things we need to do.
Yeah.
It's, like, such bullshit. There were several attempts to basically take the government to court. And in every attempt, they lost.
Yeah.
And a lot of people worked... We just ate dinner and I had to burp. a lot of people, like, really, really tried to go in that avenue.
Right.
And it just, like, never got anywhere. There was, like, they would lose, and then they would appeal, and then they would lose again, and then they would appeal again. Like, there was, like, individuals that tried to sue the government. There were groups that tried to sue the government. Like, nothing worked.
Yeah.
In 2004, we're now in 2004.
Oh, God.
There's like this UN special guy. He has like a weird type French title that's like the contemporary racism and also, I don't know, it's really long.
Yeah.
He's like contemporary racism dude.
Yeah, yeah.
And so in 2004, he was like, Canada, you should probably deal with this head tax thing.
That's amazing.
So he like gave his like official recommendation that Canada should do something. And Canada was like, uh-huh, sure. Yeah, yeah, we hear you, as they're slowly backing away.
Oh my God.
In 2005, and I love this so much, this 82-year-old man named Jim Wong, he was the son of two head tax payers. Both his parents had paid the head tax, and he was a World War II veteran.
Oh my God.
He decided to ride his motorcycle across the country to, like, raise awareness for the head tax redress.
Oh my.
So he rode his motorcycle from Victoria to Ottawa. He was 82.
I love him so much.
Well, don't get too excited, because when he got to Ottawa, Prime Minister Paul Martin refused to meet with him.
What the fuck, Canada? It's so easy to just, like, deal with this shit. Like,
yeah. So now it's 2006.
Right.
And there is going to be an election. Mm-hmm. You've got Paul Martin and the Liberals versus Stephen Harper and the Conservatives.
Two great options.
Two great Canadian leaders whose lasting legacy is one we will remember forever. So, all of a sudden, the head tax becomes, like, a pretty significant campaign issue.
Okay.
Paul Martin sort of tried to backpedal.
I was going
to
say, like, if I was Stephen Harper, I'd drag him so hard.
Yeah, so Paul Martin went on this, like, Chinese radio station.
Okay.
And made a personal apology.
Oh, that's good.
But everyone was like, you're not doing it, like, as...
That's true.
You're not doing it in the House of Commons. It's not official. You're just a dude on this radio station because you want us to vote for you.
Yeah, yeah. You're doing it as, like, an election.
Exactly. It was, like, so transparent.
Yeah.
And so the Conservatives were like, if we get elected, that there will be redress of the head tax.
Whoa.
And people were like, whoa. That's like, a real promise.
Yeah.
So... June 2006, new Prime Minister Stephen Harper, everyone's favorite dad, he did an official apology in the House of Commons to head taxpayers, their families, and the Chinese Canadian community.
Whoa.
Which was a big
definitely
deal. It is just a gesture, but...
I don't know. At the same time, it's, like, being seen and being, like, recognized in that way is, like, a huge thing.
Mm-hmm. And so then, in 2006, 785 people each received $20,000 from the federal government.
Whoa.
A lot of them were children or grandchildren of head taxpayers, people who had... But the problem was, you know... showing, like, you had to provide evidence.
Right. And a lot of times, how would you even
exactly prove that? Exactly. Yeah. And, like, it's kind of weird, because one of the ways that people were able to prove that stuff is because of the forced registration of the Chinese Canadians, because we have these records.
Ugh. That's kind
which
of
is,
like,
it's like gross.
A double-edged sword. You're like,
but even now, there's still controversy over people who were excluded from the settlement.
Right.
And it's just like, how do you even navigate
that?
It's
so hard. Yeah, it's so hard. And, like, it's not like the government, like, wrote you a receipt when you paid your head tax.
Exactly. And that in 1901, and then that person just, like, kept it in a drawer. Like, probably not.
No.
And then in 2008, a $5 million fund was established for projects that would educate Canadians about Chinese immigration restrictions.
That's great.
Yeah, and there was, I got a lot of information from this really great article from the, it's like the blog of the Canadian Human Rights Museum.
Okay.
And they listed a whole bunch of things that like resulted from that fund. And I had heard of a bunch of them. It's like art projects and museum projects. And there's also, now this huge push, to like digitize all of these archives.
Yeah.
And because everyone got like a registration card with like their name on it and everything, so to like digitize that and make it like a searchable database so people can like find their families and,
that's a great idea.
Yeah So that's a really good article, and they have a whole section on it in the museum that's really good, so you should check it out if you're interested. So that is a little bit of the history Chinese immigration to Canada. I'm really sorry. I'm going to make my official apology in the House of Commons of our living room. The Speaker of the House, our cat, is here. She's asleep. Do you think it still counts if she's asleep?
Yeah.
So I would like to say that I'm sorry.
Excuse me, madam. Oh!
She was really mad that Britt woke her up. It's just, you know, I love that Canada has this reputation for being such a welcoming country, but I think it's so important, as with so much of Canada's legacy, to not just use that to erase
Sorry.
Sally.
As you're making this beautiful thing, Sally is like literally sniffing the microphone. Sit here for a second.
Just for a second. But yeah, to not erase the negative aspects of those issues in the past.
Yeah, and definitely to, like, how much of that, maybe, like, you know, people our parents' age would be more knowledgeable about a lot of this, but, like, I didn't know a lot of that, and I should, and it's something that should be talked about, even though it's, like, when people have this, like, mentality of, like, it's in the past, we need to move on, or it's been addressed, you know, like, Stephen Harper addressed it, and they provided this fund, let's move on. It's, like, no, like, that's, it's great that it was addressed in that way, but we need to talk about this and remind Canadian citizens of this, because it's part of our heritage, and, yeah, and it's something that, you know, it's, like, woven into the fabric. And, like, you know, in the, like, after we did that film project on the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, like, one of the major aspects of the 1982 Canadian Charter was mobility rights.
Yeah.
And that was all about immigration, being able to come in and out of the country and, like, to not have your rights being restricted in any way by the government. And, like, that's 100% what they were doing to, like, Chinese citizens.
Yeah. With,
like, you know, and so I think that, yeah, it's, we've made these, like, leaps, and things are, we're trying to, like, move in a more positive direction, but, yeah, it's just crazy that, yeah, I didn't know about a lot of that. And I'm sure there's, like, a lot of Canadian Chinese citizens who are, like, similarly, like, in the dark about that past also.
And there's also probably a lot who are like, yeah, guys, no duh. Everyone should know this.
Yeah. No, I'm sure 100% if I, like, mention this to some of my friends that are Chinese and have, like have lived here for generations, they'd be like, yeah, you didn't know about the fucking head tag? And I'd be like, I knew kind of about it.
I knew kind of. Honestly,
so privileged.
That's kind of like the tagline of our podcast. I knew kind of.
Yeah, it's true. Weird stuff happens in Canada. I knew kind of.
So tune in next week for another super positive, uplifting story of immigration in Canada.
I just leaned on her tail. I'm sorry. Oh, gosh, she's attacking
now
me
now. Now she's fighting.
Yep, more immigration stories to come. We'll see you on the flip side.
Bye.